Today is Wednesday, April 25th. It's the last day of class. We'll cover reproductive physiology today. Okay, so today we're going to talk about reproductive phys. Page 129 starts male reproductive physiology. So I'm going to start with a little bit of background information for you first. On this page, there's discussion of diploid and haploid and double-stranded and single-stranded chromosomes, and I want to make sure that we're having the same conversation about that stuff. All right, so when you've talked about chromosomes in the past, you know, we assume that they're made up of DNA, and chromosomes can either take on a single-stranded appearance, looks like a single airplane propeller, or sometimes they are replicated, they've gone through DNA replication, and they take on a double-stranded appearance. So when you see them in a double-stranded appearance, like this one here, it looks like a butterfly, it looks kind of like an X, those indicate that the cell is ready to undergo some form of cell division. Now, sometimes, you know, our 23 pairs of chromosomes will get together with their partners and form what's called homologous chromosomes. Homologs are the same chromosomes pairing up, so they get together with their partners and they're actually ready to undergo meiosis, which is a special kind of sex cell division. Okay, so just keep in mind these terms here. This is kind of our cheat sheet for today. And I need to make sure you're okay with two other terms, diploid and haploid. So I'll just make some space here. Heard of these terms before? All right, so di as a prefix means how many?
Two.
Two, good. And hap sounds like half. So diploid means that we have two sets of chromosomes in a cell. Haploid means we have half that number, so we only have one set, good. And just to make the lingo easy, we oftentimes use 2N for diploid, meaning two sets. And we have N for haploid, meaning one set of chromosomes. We could sample any cell from your body except for a sex cell and expect it to be diploid, meaning it has two sets of chromosomes there. Sex cells are special. They have to have half the chromosome count because when they join with other sex cells, then we make a full set of chromosomes, 2N. So in our bodies, our diploid number is 46 chromosomes. Sex cells have only 23 chromosomes. Okay, so body cells are diploid. They have 46 total chromosomes. Sex cells are haploid. They only have 23 total chromosomes. So here's the weirdness. You can be diploid and you can have single-stranded chromosomes. You can be diploid and you can have double-stranded chromosomes. Or in the case where those diploid cells are ready to undergo meiosis to make sex cells, they may get together with their partners. So all 23 chromosomes partner up with their identical set. So that way they're ready to undergo sex cell division. Have I lost you anywhere? Okay so far? On the bottom of page 129, there's a little map there for spermatogenesis and spermiogenesis. Let me walk you through that. So we know that sex cell production begins in males around the time of puberty. So, you know, late tween years, early teen years is starting the time period where sex cells are being made. Sex cells in males are mated throughout his lifetime. In fact, a man, you know, who lives to 100 years old can still make sex cells. So it's interesting, though. The sperm can swim to an egg in a young man in about 45 minutes. In a man in his 70s or 80s, it takes 2.5 days for the sperm to swim to the egg. So, you know, a man like Hugh Hefner who had kids in his, what, 70s or 80s, unless he was doing some kind of special thing with IVF or some kind of artificial insemination, you know, they had to have really good timing for him to impregnate his wife at that time. You know, 2.5 days is a really slow-swimming sperm. But nonetheless, sperm can be made throughout a male's lifetime, starting at puberty, ending with death. So that's a long time there for those sex cells to be made. Starting here with a stem cell in the reet testis of a testy, we are looking at stem cells called spermatogonial. These stem cells are 2N. What does that mean?
Diploid.
They're diploid. That means they have how many total chromosomes?
46.
What does the N stand for?
Population number.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's just a count. Way back when, in the early parts of Bio-210, you probably learned about mitosis. Mitosis allows for us to divide one cell and make two identical clones. And we're going to send one of those cells back here to the stem cell line. That way we can continually regenerate new sex cells from that stem cell line. We're going to follow this cell. We're going to rename it as a primary spermatocyte. Because it underwent mitosis, it is still diploid. It's still 2N. Have you heard of meiosis or meiosis before? Okay, it is a two-division process. It takes a normal diploid cell and continually strips away excess DNA until you have haploid sex cells. So I need to have meiosis one occur, and I need to have meiosis two. So take that primary spermatocyte, allow it to undergo meiosis one, that's going to strip our DNA down. That's going to do a job here of pulling our DNA into separate cells. That means we're going to take those homologous chromosomes and separate them from their partners. What I end up doing as a result here is putting 23 chromosomes in each of these two secondary spermatids. So we're going to say that they are haploid at this point. And when you see a double-stranded chromosome, what does that tell you about that cell? It's ready to divide. Yeah. So we're not quite done stripping out extra DNA. We need to go through yet one more round of cell division. Take this secondary spermatocyte, allow it to proceed through meiosis two, and now you can strip those double-stranded chromosomes into single-stranded chromosomes. Okay, so we didn't change the fact that we've got haploid cells. All we did was change the amount of DNA in that chromosome. Let me hit this from the top. Starting at puberty, male spermatogonia in the reet testis of the testes starts producing primary spermatocytes. These primary spermatocytes will undergo meiosis one and will take those homologous chromosomes, the partners, and separate them. So we'll end up putting 23 chromosomes in one secondary spermatocyte and the other 23 in its neighbor. Now we undergo another round of meiosis two that further separates the DNA. We take our double-stranded chromosomes, pull them apart into separate single-stranded chromosomes. So we're still haploid. All we did was reduce the number of arms or chromatids that each one of those chromosomes carries. So it may look like spermatid would be your last stop, but in fact, we need to go through one more process. It's not cell division. but it's a streamlining process that makes active swimming sperm. So when you look at these spermatids, you say, well, that doesn't look really like a sperm. And that's right, because they're round cells, there's too much cytoplasm there, and we need to allow for these spermatids to grow a midpiece, which is powered by mitochondria, and a flagellum, which is the tail of that sperm. And you'll notice that in doing this transformation from spermatids to sperm, what happens to the shape of that cell?
It changes.
Streamlines, it changes, right? So in fact, when a sperm is formed, all this head here is nothing but DNA. So basically, you've got the nucleus forming the head of the sperm. Got to have a flagellum. And all sperm need a party hat. Party hat is called an acrosome. And you say, why does a sperm need a party hat? Well, because that acrosome is full of enzymes, and if this sperm makes it to the egg, that hat full of enzymes will rupture against the egg's plasma membrane. And eventually, all these sperm ramming their heads, their acrosomes, against the egg's membrane, eventually they'll break down the membrane and one sperm will penetrate the egg's membrane. So in fact, a lot of those 100 to 200 million sperm that leave in ejaculation fluids, only one of them will be the one that makes its way across the membrane. Many are going to commit suicide by ramming their heads against those membranes of the egg.
Kind of like torpedoes,
yeah. And they're death torpedoes. They're meant to break down and kill that membrane. So sperm live about 24 to 48 hours, you know, on the high end, maybe 3 days if they're lucky. Ejaculation fluids contain some sugars, and that's going to be critical because the mitochondria are going to need those sugars to power the sperm to their egg. So that means that if a woman is ovulating, today's Wednesday, let's use today, then she could have had sex up to 3 days before her ovulation time period, and there could have been viable living sperm still in her reproductive tract. You know, after 3 days, the sperm are mostly dead, and they are basically washed out in her vaginal fluids. So to get to this point of making a living sperm, one that's ready to be ejaculated from the epididymis, then we're looking at about 10 weeks time. Okay, so 2.5 months time from the start of the spermatogonium until you're ready to ejaculate those sperm with the final step. So, you know, every day several hundred million sperm are made by a male's testes. Imagine if all of those resulted in a viable pregnancy. We'd already be living on Mars at this point, right? So, you know, a lot of them are killed by a female's vaginal fluids. A lot of them do kill themselves ramming against that membrane of the egg. So, yeah, torpedoes, right? So, not all of them are going to make it there, so that's why there's so many made with each day. Now, if a man does not ejaculate those sperm, you know, you're thinking about millions made per day, you think, God, that's a lot down there in the testes, it has to go somewhere. So what system picks up escaped fluids? There you go. So if those sperm are not ejaculated, white blood cells called phagocytes will break down the sperm, and the lymphatic system will carry off those sperm back into the body's fluids. So, you know, that's why we don't see an accumulation of sperm after a period of time. Okay, so the thing to keep track of here is what we're doing. We're taking a diploid spermatogonium. We let it undergo mitosis to produce primary spermatocytes. One primary spermatocyte returns to the stem cell line. That allows us to continue making more sperm. That primary spermatocyte undergoes meiosis one. What happens to your chromosomes when you go from primary spermatocyte to secondary?
They divide
them down. So you go from a diploid primary spermatocyte to a
haploid,
right. Half the chromosome count. So we go from 46 chromosomes here to how many? To 23, good. The purpose of undergoing meiosis II is to take those double-stranded chromosomes and separate them into what? Single-stranded, yes. So take them and strip them down again. Now we're still dealing with haploid cells, but they just happen to have the right amount of DNA. And so the spermiogenesis process takes these spermatids and then transforms them into viable swimming sperm. And this process takes about 20 days. It occurs as those sperm swim through the 20 or so feet found in the epididymis. So when ejaculation occurs, contractions, peristalsis waves occur in the epididymis and propel those sperm onto the vas deferens, out toward the ejaculatory duct, and then toward the urethra. Okay, questions here? Pretty straightforward process. Females work almost the same way. All right, so that's page 129. You'll want to read through the anatomy up to that point. You'll want to read through page 130. And then let me flip you on over to female physiology. And that comes from page 135.
How heavy is this stuff on the final?
I'm thinking out of 125 questions, 8 to 10 questions on this stuff. And what I did for you, because I know you guys have a lot to do right now, on the very last page, there's focus topics. If you can answer those are basically your those are your questions. Last, very last page.
If you put those exact questions on there, that'd be great.
They're not worded the exact same. But if you can answer them, and some of them require more than one word, then they'll get you in the right ballpark.
So those questions would be generally like the 8 or 10 of them that you're talking about?
Correct, yeah. So I tried to lay female oogenesis side by side with male spermatogenesis so you can see how they're similar. We're going to start with the female in the ovary, and we're going to work with the female actually before birth. So that's a little different. With males, we started the process at puberty, but females, we're looking at a time period before birth. And they say that a female is born with all the oogonium she'll ever have, although there's some research that shows during a female's lifetime, she may in fact be able to make more oogonium. But nonetheless, we're looking at about 400,000 oogonium for a female. They are diploid cells. And those cells will actually undergo mitosis to form primary oocytes. Okay, and so at birth, that female has those primary oocytes sitting there in her ovaries and waiting for puberty. So at puberty, the hypothalamus turns on the release of some gonadotropic releasing hormones, GnRH, and they tell the anterior pituitary to make some stimulating hormones, things like FSH and GLH. You know, these two hormones work in males as well. They also bring about spermatogenesis and testosterone production in males. In females, FSH and LH bring about production of an egg. So whenever girls hit puberty, whatever age it is, you know, traditionally they said it's like between 11 and 14, but nowadays it seems like it's a lot younger than that. So whatever time period, the brain turns on these sex hormones to notify the ovaries to make these sex cells. We're going to take one or so of these primary oocytes per month and mature it into a secondary oocyte. So if you follow the pattern, primary oocytes are 2N. And then what happens to the secondary oocytes' DNA content? 1N. Good. So we're going to cut down that DNA by half. And you'll notice that I made the secondary oocyte a lot bigger than that other cell called a polar body. That polar body is considered a junk cell. And what happens is it gives away its cytoplasm and organelles to this bigger secondary oocyte. So every month, there's a race between multiple primary oocytes to be the winner. The winner is the secondary oocyte. That is the cell that's ovulated from a female's ovary. So they are produced like blisters. They pop off the surface of the female's ovary. They live for 24 hours only, and they're pulled by ciliary action down into the fallopian tube. So those fimbriae that wrap around the ovary don't actually touch it. The egg, this oocyte, has to be pulled by cilia down into the female's fallopian tube. So this one cell, this secondary oocyte, is ovulated once per month. Typically, it's just one. Occasionally, there may be two. And if it's not fertilized in the fallopian tube, then this is the end of our story. So that's a pretty simple story there. No fertilization, this is where it ends. If there is sperm present in that fallopian tube, then fertilization could occur. What do you think has to happen to our secondary oocyte if it's fertilized? Is it done dividing? It is in fact not done dividing. So let's follow if fertilization occurs. Okay, so here's the catch. That secondary oocyte has double-stranded chromosomes, just like our secondary spermatocyte. Double-stranded chromosomes mean that there's a little too much DNA in that cell's nucleus. So we undergo yet one more cell division to produce an ovum. What layer of division are we at now? Meiosis II, yeah. So that's kind of cool. Females say, you know what, I'm not wasting my time dividing this cell all the way to the ovum stage unless it's fertilized, because it's a waste of time to go through that extra cell division unless fertilization takes place. So females' bodies say, hey, I'm just going to do what I need to do, the bare minimum. I'm going to stop here with the secondary oocyte, and that's going to be the end of the line unless a sperm comes along. When the sperm comes along, that secondary oocyte completes meiosis II. That strips our double-stranded chromosomes down to what?
To a haploid.
Haploid single-stranded. Yep. So you still make a polar body. It's just a junk cell. It is not capable of being fertilized. It's too tiny. It wouldn't live long enough if it were fertilized. So the next stage after the ovum or egg and sperm join is a diploid cell, and it's called a zygote. So the zygote is back to being diploid once again, and now we're starting with a new cell from a new generation. So this zygote is in your fallopian tube. As a female, it travels for the next 7 days down to the uterus, and it tests the waters for a suitable home in the uterus. If the hormone levels are correct and the blood supply is right, after 7 days of floating, it will have burrowed into the female's endometrial lining and formed a modest connection with the mother's uterus wall. So that's why we need to have a really large secondary oocyte. It has to live and survive off of its own cytoplasm for up to around 7 days. You know, 7 days later, it's been fertilized. The zygote's been rapidly dividing through a process called cleavage. And what's implanted into the mother is a little tiny ball of cells, you know, and this is only 7 days after her ovulation time period. we are not even to the point that the mom would have gone through her next period or menstrual cycle yet, and she may already be pregnant with this implanted zygote. So if the zygote doesn't find a suitable home, it is washed out in the female's fluids before she even has her next menstrual cycle. She never will know that she was pregnant during that time period. But if it does take and the hormone levels change, then she should skip that period, and then, you know, of course, she may figure out that she's pregnant at that point. Okay, so this is a little more complex than males. Okay, so for females, before birth, they have formed these primary oocytes that are haploid in nature. At puberty, these primary oocytes start being matured into secondary oocytes. They are haploid. Yeah, the secondaries are haploid. And the first ones, yeah, diploid.
Oh, yeah.
So let's put the cells that we've got here. And then this will finally be single-stranded. So if a secondary oocyte is fertilized, in what part of a female's body will that fertilization event occur? Fallopian tube, right. And if no fertilization occurs, of course, that would be the end of our story. But assuming fertilization does occur, that should occur in the fallopian tube, and the zygote, the reproductive cell that's the next stage of a new generation, that floats into the uterus, and a ball of cells is eventually implanted into what layer of the uterus?
Endometrium.
Endometrium, that's right. And some 40 weeks later, then of course, you know, if this pregnancy goes to full term, we're looking at an infant being born. So what I'd like to take you through real quick is just female ovarian and menstrual cycles. It is pictured in your course pack on page 138. I'm going to put the screen down. Anybody need a picture before I put the screen down? The cell lives. Secondary oocytes only live 24 hours. Okay, I want to race. If you need one later, we can still come back. So I want to tell you a little bit about this egg. It's not just a secondary oocyte that gets ovulated. It actually comes with its own posse of cells. You'll notice in this picture there's a ring of cells around the secondary oocyte. This ring of cells here is called the follicle. So it's like this queen has arrived when it's ovulated. It's not just a cell. It's a multitude of cells that are coming out of the ovary during ovulation. And you can see here from the surface of the ovary, the secondary oocyte ruptures like a blister, and then it's going to be pulled down into that fallopian tube where fertilization can occur by ciliary action. Okay, so this is what I wanted to talk to you about, and this is called the female's menstrual and ovarian cycle. On average, it's around 28 days in length. And, for females know that 1 month their cycle may be around 25 days, the next month it may be 29 or 30 days. So not only can this vary, you know, for a particular female, but it can vary from one female to another. So there is, you know, they say nothing is necessarily normal, it's what's normal for you and your length of time. Now, the first 14 days of this cycle, You'll notice the first 5 of those first 14 days is when a female typically will have her menstrual cycle. It may not last that long. It may last 2 or 3 days. It may last longer than 5 days. But the first time period, they're up to 5 days on average, is when we see the female's endometrial lining sloughing off. And that's what we call the menstrual cycle. You'll notice hormone levels there. Are they very high during the menstrual cycle? They look pretty low, yeah. So, you know, estrogen and progesterone have not yet peaked. LH and FSH have also not peaked during those first 5 days. So after the female cycle is over, notice here for the uterus, the endometrial lining starts to build in thickness. What is it anticipating could happen? Yeah, pregnancy, right? So that endometrial lining begins to thicken after menstrual cycle is done in anticipation that a pregnancy could occur. Watch what's happening up here in the female's ovary. You know, I was telling you about that posse of cells that's ovulated with the female's oocyte. That ring of cells is called a follicle, and it's also maturing inside the female's ovary. Around day 14, right before, notice this huge spike in LH, FSH, and estrogen. That happens to occur right before day 14, and there's something that's going to happen on day 14 called ovulation. So what happens to the secondary oocyte at that time? Ruptures like a blister. That oocyte leaves the ovary and is pulled where? What's that tube called? There you go. Pulled into that fallopian tube. So the spike in LH and FSH lead to a spike in estrogen levels. That leads to this spike in hormones that causes the secondary oocyte and the follicle to be ovulated. And so now you've got 1 day's time that that oocyte lives, and during that time period, there may be sperm present in the female's fallopian tube, and fertilization could occur. So that means 3 days before she ovulates up to a day after she ovulates, she could have had sex. And so there's actually a good 4 day window there during which time she may have had sexual intercourse and sperm could be present in her fallopian tube. All right, so if there are no sperm present, what happens to the oocyte after 24 hours?
Deteriorates,
dead, right? Okay, and eventually the follicle too also disintegrates. But the uterus is a little slow on the message. The uterus says, I'm going to play house anyway. I'm going to pretend that there's going to be a fertilized egg coming here. And it continues to thicken the lining in the hopes that there might be a fertilization event. But eventually, the death of this follicle, it's called a corpus luteum, that causes the hormone levels to drop off dramatically. Notice how progesterone, which had peaked after ovulation to maintain pregnancy, it declines greatly. And notice how estrogen also declines after ovulation. So, you know, eventually these hormone levels drop off, and that's what PMS is, right? The hormone levels cave down, and so then we have, you know, water retention, mood changes, headaches, all sorts of things can happen at that point. And then finally the menstrual cycle begins again as the cycle starts anew. So, if fertilization does occur, what do you expect to happen to the endometrial lining?
Get bigger, yeah.
And progesterone, this one here, is going to maintain pregnancy. It's going to stay elevated as long as a female is pregnant. And after she has the baby, the progesterone levels will go back down. You can see they're very low here at the beginning of that cycle. So this is a great time for us to review hormones. Where are stimulating hormones made? Anterior pituitary, good. Under the direction of hormones coming from where?
Hypothalamus,
good. So GnRH, gonadotropic releasing hormone, turns on LH and FSH. They come from the anterior pituitary. In a female, they tell the ovaries to make and release these eggs, and also to make and release things like estrogen. So these hormones are, you know, now coming back full circle for us as we finish up the course. So I didn't cover the anatomy here for you. I'm hoping that what you've had in lab is good to review. You may just want to read through the anatomy portion of this chapter, but the main thing I wanted to hit was the physiology for you. All right, what part of this do you need to hear again? Any questions on old stuff that you want to hit before the final comes on Monday?
Are we going to need to know, like, the primary follicle, the growing follicle, and all that?
I wouldn't worry about all the details there. Need to hear any part of male spermatogenesis or female oogenesis again? Any part of hormones?
Pretty much all of it.
Start from the beginning. Okay, just mentioning, since we're talking about FSH and LH, on page 130, you'll notice they're also mentioned there for male reproductive systems. So page 130, you'll notice FSH and LH are also mentioned there. In a male, FSH promotes spermatogenesis. In a female, it promotes oogenesis and the creation of that egg. And you'll notice that LH produces promotes the production of testosterone by male testes. You know, in females, LH promotes estrogen production and progesterone production in a female's ovary. So those two hormones work in similar ways in males and females. Okay, so FSH promotes spermatogenesis in males. It promotes making a female's egg and ovulating it. By contrast, LH in males promotes testosterone production by male testes, whereas in females it promotes the production of estrogens and progesterone. Any questions on what we've covered so far today? Y'all good to go? As good as you're going to be? Anything I can help you with? You all have been great this semester. I wish you the best of luck. Hope you get good news about your programs for fall semester. If I can ever be of any help to you, you got my email and I'm on main campus usually. Please come by and see if I can ever do anything for you.
Thank you.
Best of luck Monday.